Okay, well, I am not the only author of this book. I have three co-authors, a pretty senior woman, one white, one black, and one Latina woman. And we basically have an ambition to try to write a benchmark book so that everybody else who would like to study elected officials of color and from the gendered perspective, that means we focus on women of color as well as men of color and try to make comparisons between them. And then, of course, they are more than one color in that the women of color. So we have African American, Latina, Asian American, and also American Indians. And we try to make comparison and also looking at not only just those at the congressional level or even at the state legislators level. 90%, more than 90% of all these elected officials of color are actually serving at the local. That means school board, city council, and also the county board or county supervisors level.
What trends did you come across when you were collecting all this data?
Well, you know, this is actually a long-term project, way longer than I would have imagined when I actually joined the team that already started by the three co-authors. The idea of it actually came in early 1990s. You know, in the year 1992 is actually the year of women. At that time, you know, it was after the very contested hearing of Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas, that the nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court at that time. It was actually about sexual harassment charges pressed against by Anita Hill to Clarence Thomas at that time. And because the result was that all white male senators, U.S. senators, they were basically ignored or dismissed what Anita Hill said about, you know, being woman of color. She was being sexually harassed by a black man. So because these men didn't really believe there is that intersection of race and gender. They only look at either race or either gender, and because the two belong to the same race, so they think there is when Clarence Thomas actually said this sexual charge is actually about high-tech lynching, you know, when he mentioned those terms, and these officials basically just, you know, take his words, and eventually he got the approval, and that enraged actually U.S. women. It reminded everybody of every woman of their marginalized status, and also in a white dominant society. And that's why the Year of Women basically was the year when more than a record number of U.S. women contesting for offices, particularly at the November election, a record high. That means three of U.S. senators were actually women. One of them is actually the first black woman. And then we also have a record number of U.S. Congress women that were elected at that time. So it was the year at that time, way back in 1992, when my co-authors were thinking that perhaps we should look at a project of women of color and see whether or not what kind of number they have, what kind of experiences does it take for them to be able to win the offices, and also what kind of trend. Eventually, we're talking about trend. Now it's 2016 when the book was published. So we were able to actually document a trend that was not really being so obvious. When people talking about the rise of people of color, they are basically talking about male. Indeed, a lot more are male.
However, Lian's research suggests that there is a rise of women of color in elected government positions. She believes that this is because women of color appeal to all races and that people believe the backgrounds of these women make them more qualified to represent and help fix their grievances. Lian goes on to explain the idea of regressive political backlash and how this is a result of a growing inclusive democracy.
8 years of the U.S. president being presided over by a non-white male, right? And that is the same kind of phenomenon we would say behind the rising of women, people of color into the elected offices. When Obama was elected into offices, this actually immediately the formation of the Tea Party, right? Immediately we can call it a reactionary politics. And we call it, instead of progressive politics, we call it regressive politics. And unfortunately, unfortunately, we are seeing the result of 2016 as actually, an indicator of the progress, the regressive politics at work, the policy of backlash politics, not only a backlash, but also regress, actually returning to the election of ultra-conservative people who are going to turning back the progress that we have made because of not only just people of color, but all people that believe in the need to be more inclusive, that for this democracy to be more representative of all the people in it. But we are seeing some we have actually a strong resistance to the continuing moving toward the opening up of political opportunities. So we are seeing hopefully it's a temporary setback. But this is the nation's history, that every progress is actually made on the back of regress. And then, however, there will be resistance. So we're predicting that there will be resistance and protests so strong and inevitable, and that we are also talking about eventually we will be able to regain some ground and even make more ground because of people's trying very hard to, and we believe in the virtue of diversity. We believe in the necessity and inevitability of the U.S. nation to become a lot more colorful. And so the people we are studying are certainly vanguard in this process. We are seeing also the opportunity for them to either sustain the growth, but also to help us fight back all this lost ground that we have, that has been evident in this past election.
Is there anything else that you would like to add?
Well, you indeed have addressed the very important message we would like to share with our readers and other audiences is actually that do not be despair, do not fear that this is the politics, the end of politics. Actually, this nation has always been a mixed bag of progress and regress, and every progress is usually followed by regress, but regress will be followed by progress as well, even though it is a two-step forward, one step back. That is a frustrating experience for everybody who is in a marginalized situation. But it doesn't mean that is the end of the story. And I think our title is called Contested Transformation. The book is talking about, we documented this very inevitable, very clear trend of demographic transformation. However, whether or not it can be sustained at the level and the speed that we have witnessed so far, basically talking about the last 30, 40 years, after 1965 with the passage of the Voting Rights Act and with the passage of the Immigration Act. And that is actually the two very important landmark act that eventually explain the demographic transformation. So in terms of policy transformation, we certainly cannot assume all the people of color are going to elected officials would think the same or have the same kind of commitment actually to advance democracy, a multicultural democracy, as we would hope they would. However, there is a progress, there is a process as well in terms of how can you make them to be more responsible to their constituencies. And so it's a work in progress, and we hope the nature of the contested nature of our progress is actually a kind of a way to encourage people to participate more in the political process, knowing that every vote counts and that there is hope that we eventually can deliver in terms of a much more truly representative democracy, because our nation has been changing all the time, and we hope our elected landscape would also reflect better of those changes, and that is something that we see that there's an opening, and that our elected officials that we studied for, they're already there and creating some pathway for us. And so I thought that's a very, I guess, very inspiring way to think of how the politics will change in this nation.